This audio interview with Isabel Coe was recorded on 5th October 2018 in Sydney by Nikkei Australia's Mayu Kanamori and Masako Fukui. This interview was recorded for the Cowra Voices geolocative storytelling app, created in 2019 and launched to coincide with the 75th anniversary of the Cowra breakout. For more information, please refer to the overview in this archive.
So my name is Isabel Coe. I was born in Cowra. I'm from the Wiradjuri Nation, from the Upper Billigalari, the Lachlan River.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about your role in your community, or in the, could be the general Cowra community, it could be about with the Wiradjuri people?
In Cowra, I've worked as the CEO of the Cowra Local Aboriginal Land Council, where we strive towards making a better community for Aboriginal people. Right now, I currently work for Billigalari Aboriginal Corporation, which is a newly established corporation. Part of that corporation is developing programs for Aboriginal people in the community to strengthen our community, build partnerships with the local services in the community, and create employment opportunities for Aboriginal people.
Can you tell us a little bit about Wiradjuri people, how long the history has been, and about the country?
Wiradjuri people have existed for over 50,000 years. We are one of the original people of this country. Wiradjuri covers Cowra through to Dubbo, through to Wagga, Peak Hill.
Have you had any involvement whilst you have, you know, you've lived in Cowra with Japanese people?
I haven't had involvement personally, no.
So have you heard of, other Aboriginal people, your friends or your family members' involvement with the Japanese people, and if so, what are they?
The stories that I know of from a Indigenous point of view, obviously a lot of the Aboriginal people that have come from Cowra lived on a Rambi mission. The stories that have been told are from their perspectives of what had happened on the night and what had happened prior to that event that took place. But I think to be able to actually tell their stories of what, from their point of views, is to actually talk about the history behind Cowra. So obviously with Cowra, so we have a Rambi mission, which is 2.5 kilometres from the main town, from the local town. It's located on the western Lachlan Valley, where it's a mission that's segregated from the main town. A Rambi mission was established in the 1890s. Obviously with missions, so they were put in place as a means to segregate Aboriginal people from the main society, where Aboriginal people didn't have control over their own lives. And missions, which are also known as reserves, were managed by mission managers or government officials. So a lot of the stories that come from Cowra, a lot of them come from a Rambi mission. A Rambi mission was managed by the mission managers, where the mission managers had the complete control over Aboriginal people and their lives. They had the control over what education one would be taught, They had the control over the rations of food Aboriginal people would eat. They had the control over who one would marry, and they had the control over who they deemed as half-caste for those children of fairer skin to be removed from their families and assimilated. Obviously, from the arrival of the British colonisation in Australia, Europeans believed that by integrating Aboriginal women with the men of European descent, that those children being born would be of fairer skin. And through the different generations of breeding, they would have children of half-caste, quarter-caste, and of quadrant descent, and so on. Many of those children of fairer skin were removed from their families and placed into institutions where they were trained to take their place amongst the white society, and all traces of their Aboriginality were to be erased. At Rambi Mission, where I was born, I have family that have lived there for over five generations. So a lot of my stories come from Rambi Mission. I have aunties and uncles that served in both the World Wars. Aboriginal men and Aboriginal women both served in the war. But when Aboriginal men and women returned from the war, they had to go back to what they were before they went to war, which was going back to the missions. We had two family members, a McGuinness and a Murray, who was actually guards up at the prisoner of war camp. So their stories, when they were guards of the prisoner of war camp, was that whilst they were living in their own concentration camp of the mission, they were serving as guards on another concentration camp. And the stories that they have was that obviously it was a very tragic event, and they got called in the night after the event. But on the actual night of the event, there was talk amongst the community that whilst there was the breakout, government officials also believed that there was going to be another breakout from another concentration camp that was hidden out of sight, which was Rambi Mission. So on the night of the breakout, Rambi Mission and the Aboriginal people on that mission were forced to be locked into their houses, not knowing what was actually going on outside of the community. So Aboriginal people were locked into their houses on the night of the breakout, not knowing what was going on. Obviously, with the mission of the layout of the mission, there is only one way in and one way out. So there was no actually leaving the mission without actually passing government officials. After the breakout, there was talks amongst the community, which they called a Rambi Aid community because everyone knew everyone on the mission. The talks were that Rambi Mission, because they were in a concentration camp against their own will where it contained men, women and children, that they were going to, well, there was rumours that they were, Rambi Mission was going to be moved to the prisoner of war camp once the prisoner of war camp closed down. Mum Shell, who actually wrote a book on her experience, she gives the story that, once again, like how they were locked into the Rambi Mission. Some of the rumours that circulated around Rambi was that Rambi Mission itself was going to be moved to the Japanese prisoner of war camp when the prisoners returned home. There was a petition as to whether or not that would take place from the outside community. But because the Japanese prisoner of war camp was too close to town, they thought just to keep the Aboriginal people segregated the 2.5 kilometres from the main town. talking about Billy Goat Hill to whilst the Aboriginal people, well, Aboriginal people didn't know a lot that was going on outside of the mission, obviously being segregated. But Billy Goat Hill is actually, to Aboriginal people, a very sacred site. So we had connections to that site that is now of a tourist location where we had, it was a site that overlooked the country and it allowed Aboriginal people to see if there was anyone coming to our part of our country. So we always went to Billy Goat Hill. The way you see Billy Goat Hill now, it actually wasn't what it looked like back when I was little. So when I was little, there were all fences up going through Billy Goat Hill, and it was actually filled with kangaroos and emus. And even now when you do walk through Billy Goat Hill, it has a very spiritual, it's a spiritual site where we do have men's site. A lot of the sacred sites that belong to the people of Wiradjuri, obviously Wiradjuri people existed for over 50,000 years, so our connection to country is very strong and remains strong. But behind the history of our people is something that continues to be hidden, which it also includes a lot of our sites.
You said that it was men's site, and I don't know if you're allowed to talk about it, but can you let us know what you can tell us about, and if you can't, that's okay as well.
The only thing that I could talk about, because obviously as a woman, so we don't actually talk about men's business, is that it was a very sacred site.
While we're on sacred sites, you know, we've got all these places on the map. Are there others?
Yes, so all of Cowra is a sacred site. And to Aboriginal people, we have connections all through Wiradjuri. Obviously, Arambi Mission wasn't the only place that Aboriginal people had to be forced to segregate to. Aboriginal people set up camps just outside Arambi. They set up camps around near the showgrounds. They set up camps down near the Lachlan River under the bridge. There was also another where the Cowra Golf Links is called now. It was actually called Bagtown, which was part of Arambi Mission. And Billy Goat Hill, obviously, it also would have been a place where a lot of Aboriginal men and women had camped around that area as well as part of protecting country.
Sakura Avenue?
Yeah, so that Sakura Avenue, we had a lot of very old scar trees. And the way you see it now obviously isn't what it looked like. So we had scar trees all along Cherry Blossom Avenue where Aboriginal people actually stood in numbers against the removal of a lot of our scar trees. It was in the, I don't know the dates, but I can definitely find out. Yeah.
About
70s,
60s, 80s, or earlier.
There was actually two. So there was the one for Billy Goat Hill and then there was the one for along the Cherry Blossom Drive.
Insofar as this app is going to sit on the council website, I don't know how far this could go, but I want to know. I want to know if those cherry blossoms, the Japanese reconciliation symbol, was made wet. The Aboriginal sacred scar trees were removed to make way for that reconciliation.
I mean, obviously, because I worked for the Cowra Local Aboriginal Land Council and my family has lived in that community for over five generations, we do have like photos of what it looked like prior to the demolition of our sacred sites.
Hmm.
So obviously with Aboriginal people being segregated onto Erambie Mission, Aboriginal people weren't allowed to leave the mission. And to be able to leave the mission, you had to apply for a certificate of exemption, which Aboriginal people were applying well into the 1950s. To apply for a certificate, it meant that Aboriginal people could, one, leave the reserve and go down the streets as everyone else. But obviously there was a catch, and that catch was that they had to leave behind their families, their communities, their culture. My great-grandmother, who we call Ninny Wedge, had to apply for a certificate of exemption in 1956. She had a medical need that she needed treatment from the hospital. So for her to get the treatment that she needed, she had to apply for the certificate just to receive the help from the hospital. Yeah, the last mission manager to leave Erambie Mission wasn't until 1965. And Aboriginal people actually didn't receive their freedom to be able to leave these missions and reserves until the 1967 referendum. So a lot of the stories come from Inkara, Erambie.
What about this rumour of the urban myth about the POW escapees being protected by Aboriginal people? Have you heard of this, and is it true or is it a rumour?
So the rumours that I don't know of any personally, but some of the rumours that I've heard of from the community was that the Japanese prisoners of war, whether they were protected by Aboriginal people, I don't know. But I do know that there was a book that was written by Anita Hayes, who worked with my grandmother on some of the stories of Aboriginal people protecting those Japanese prisoners of war.
This app is all about peace, and I'm wondering if there are any Wiradjuri stories that you are able to share with us that surrounds our messages of peace.
I think, obviously, what had happened at the prisoner of war camp towards those Japanese prisoners of war was a very tragic event. And as a Aboriginal woman whose family have come from very similar experiences, I do give gratitude for those ones that lost their lives and to their loved ones. There was the, I think there was I think more along the lines for those that lost their lives, the Japanese prisoners of war, of what they had to go through and how they went about trying to escape. I think it's a very touchy subject, only because of my own people being in that very same boat and still being in that boat, where they are prisoners in their own country.
While we're talking about country, the big rocks, the boulders that are around, there's around everywhere around Kaurau, but especially around that area of the Japanese gardens, and in fact, the architect, landscape architect of those Japanese gardens, saw those two huge rocks there. And I think he thought that one was like a receiving rock and the other one was a godly rock. Anyway, I just wanted to know the relationship between the Wiradjuri people and those rocks.
Well, with all our sacred sites, so being Wiradjuri people being very spiritual, and what we believe is when spirits pass on, they actually turn to the formations of rocks. And certain rocks can define certain areas, whether or not it's a men's area, whether it's a woman's area, whether it's a birthing site. And a lot of our rocks and our scar trees, they go hand in hand. We do still have rocks in Billy Goat Hill that actually resemble our people and animals. With the rocks at Billy Goat Hill, we don't see a rock just as being a rock. Obviously, when our spirit passes on, we go into the dream time, which is what a lot of people would call it. And they would go into the rocks. And those rocks would symbolize the people or certain animals. There are a few rocks going right up to the top where it actually looks like a man overseeing the country. And then there's another rock just as you're going up the stairwell where it looks like a, it could be a eagle, it could be a goanna, where it's like the eyes are watching who comes and who goes. A lot of our stories that we do have, or through Billy Goat Hill and along the Cherry Blossom Driveway and even right behind where the Japanese prisoner of war camp is located, some of our sites are actually fenced off where we ourselves can't actually get access to it.
Can we talk about the cemetery? Are Aboriginal people buried in that Kara General Cemetery?
There are some, yes, that are buried in the cemetery. Obviously, with the history behind Aboriginal people and how Aboriginal people were forced to live on missions, a lot of the burials of Aboriginal men, women and children are actually placed on the mission. A lot of those burials have been dismantled and been where you have redevelopment of other things.
So, you know, the Australian War Cemetery, are there any Aboriginal soldiers there?
Yes.
Can you tell us about it?
Well, we have, in my family, we had quite a few Aboriginal men and women who served in the war. If you go to the Kara RSL, there are a few of our family members listed on the wall. Not a lot, unfortunately. Like I said, when they came back from war, they weren't treated like the same as everyone else in their own country. So a lot of them didn't get the recognition that they deserved and remained the quiet achievers. Obviously, when they did go to war, a lot of the Aboriginal men and women fighting for their country, a lot of their own children were being removed from the missions and placed into institutions. But, yes, we do have a few Aboriginal men and women who were buried at the Australian War Cemetery. There was a story that I did read of a one of the first Japanese prisoners of war that was captured. I think he was captured over in the NT, but don't quote me on that. I could be wrong. Who was actually captured by a Indigenous man. And he was one of the ones who was brought here to Kara. Hmm.
This is the Minami who was captured on Melville Island, I think. Northern Territory. Okay. Do you have any questions? My last question is about, and then you might have other things you might want to say, but my question, this is something that I think is...
you can talk.
I can talk. insofar as the Wiradjuri people are custodians of our country and of country out in Kara, there are 524 Japanese now buried on your country, and through decomposition, etc., it's becoming part of the landscape. And I just wondered if you, what are they welcomed?
As Wiradjuri being one of the oldest cultures in Australia, where we have existed for over 50,000 years, we lived a very peaceful and war-free environment. And as part of our culture, we did exchange with other cultures. So for those Japanese prisoners of war that are buried on Wiradjuri country, we welcome them as part of our country.
Now, you're a leader in your community. Is there anything else you want to tell us about peace, peace and reconciliation between Japan, Australia, Japan, Kara, Japanese people and Wiradjuri people, a three-way?
To be able to lead towards reconciliation for the people of Wiradjuri that come from Kara between Australia and Japan for Aboriginal people is allowing our history to actually be recognised, to be able to create a future that's based on equality for all, and that includes Aboriginal people.
I'm finished with my questions. Anything else?
Can I just get you to go right back to the beginning? Just, would you like to say your name again and just introduce yourself?
My name is Isabel Coe. I was born in Kara, come from Erambi Mission, Kara being of the Wiradjuri Nation. My role in community, I work towards creating a better space for Aboriginal people and our community.
Thank you.
Thank you.